Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 11th of March. This is a show that you have requested, and I make it somewhat emotional in doing this program, partially because you have been so kind to me over the past 5.5 weeks with your cards and your letters and your prayers and your support. And I am hopeful that as a result of this hour, we might be able to make more of you healthier people. I need to tell you my story, partially because that's the motivation for this hour today. At 7:30 in the morning, 5 weeks and 4 days ago, I had just finished breakfast and was calling up to my 15-year-old son, who dilly-dallies a bit in the morning, to see if he was dressed and ready for breakfast so we could soon head out the door to school and to work. I didn't make it to work. He didn't make it to school because 5 minutes later I was asking him to wake up his father. Something had hit me hard, and I knew what it was. I broke into a cold sweat. My jaws felt as though they were the size of beach balls, and my chest felt as though it was on fire. And I felt also, as people who have had heart attacks say, that I had crossed over to the dark side. The boys called the paramedics, who said that I had a cardiac event that was happening, and shortly thereafter I was wheeled into surgery at a hospital close to the house where angioplasty was done and 2 stents were put in. I really had no warning that this was coming. I've been a swimmer 3 days a week for 25 years. I eat a fairly healthy diet. I usually have lots of energy. And shame on me, I had, and I hate to admit this, been a smoker on and off, which was a major contributing factor, as my doctor will soon say. I had been under more stress than ever in my life the past 6 months, caring for my 92-year-old father, who lived in Chicago and had a heart attack and was in the bathtub by himself for a day and a half last summer, and then he had a stroke 3 days later. He had no doctor, so there's a family history of not going to the doctor, and he had no one to care for him but me. It was 90 miles too far away, and I was trying to manage an adolescent boy, a full-time job, a foreign exchange student who was staying with us, and his death in November left me heartsick. So that's my story, and my cardiologist has kindly agreed to be with us this hour. Many of you have asked, how can we prevent what happened to you? What is it we can learn from what happened to you? Hundreds of you have sent me well wishes and requested this program, and so today we learn what we can learn about treatment for heart disease and prevention of it. Dr. Lee Biblow is a cardiologist and a wonderful man. He's in the cardiovascular medicine department at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. His care emphasis includes cardiovascular diseases and arrhythmias. He is board certified in cardiology, clinical cardiac electrophysiology, and internal medicine. He's also vice chair of the Department of Medicine at Froedtert. Much of his training was in Cleveland at University Hospitals and Case Western Reserve University. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him. We'll be flooded with calls, I know. And the number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. Hello, Dr. Biblow. Thank you
Kathleen.
So much for being with us. And maybe we can save some lives here. I hope so, because it's not a good thing to go through, I got to tell you. It's just not. So the biggest risk factors, you know, and I hate to admit, because I smoked on and off for, you know, some of my life, and that, you know, you can tell people, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. But if I hadn't at all, I probably would not have had a heart attack.
Probably. You know, coronary disease is the most common cause of heart disease, and maybe a little background about that. You know, the heart's a muscle, and it needs nutrition, oxygen and glucose, which it gets through 3 coronary arteries that supply the heart with these nutrients. Those coronary arteries, like when we're born, are spanking new sewer pipes.
Hmm.
And as we age, there are things that we do that can accumulate sludge in these sewer pipes, or cholesterol plaques, that can eventually cause a blockage of that coronary artery, and if it's not fixed, loss of muscle or heart attack, which is when muscle dies because it doesn't get nutrition. And so the goal is for patients to prevent that from happening. And the tragic thing about heart disease in the United States is it's preventable. You don't need a gamma knife. You don't need an MRI scan. You need to alter your lifestyle. And in your typical case, smoking, the number one risk factor for heart disease in the U.S. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, and an inactive lifestyle, which is characterized in the U.S. by obesity. So if you deal with those five risk factors, you're likely not going to have heart disease.
Mm-hmm. What about genetics? Do we hear about people who have heart attacks in their 40s, their fathers, and it's usually men we hear about had heart attacks also in their 40s. Is genetics a major factor?
Genetics plays a role, and it's certainly a risk factor. Often genetics is mediated through factors like high blood pressure and your lipid profile. So those are both have a genetic component. So if you attack those, you can really mitigate the genetic influence on your heart disease.
Mm-hmm. You reach a certain age and you're more a candidate. Your risk is higher. If you're a male, it's when you're 50. If you're a female, it's when you're 60. Is that right?
Right. You know, heart disease, the quote the often said, is the number one killer in men and the number one killer in women. The difference in men and women is women tend to have it about 10 years later. So the incidences are equal but offset by about 10 years. A lot of debate as to why that is, but nonetheless, in both men and women, it's an equal opportunity employer. It affects them both equally.
Mm-hmm. And once you have coronary heart disease, do you need to dramatically change your life in order to keep living?
Well, the obvious answer to that is yes, but I would argue that way before that, the answer is you need to address your lifestyle before you develop that first event.
Yeah.
I've given the analogy of, when you go out and buy a Toyota, how much time do you spend looking at the wheels and, arguing about the cost and looking at the engine and the windshield wipers and everything else you buy about a car, but how much time do you spend thinking about your health? How much time do people spend, do they know their blood pressure? Do they know their lipid profile? Do they exercise regularly? Do they watch their caloric intake? The answer to that's no. And yet, this is your body, the most precious thing we have. Heart disease is the number one killer, and patients, don't embrace that. Maybe the medical profession, I think we've got it a bit backwards. It's not my responsibility to take care of your heart. Really, it's your responsibility.
Right.
I give you some advice. I try to steer the right way. But it's your responsibility to take care of your heart.
Right. And we know that, but we don't do it. So why is it that our obesity rates are so high? Why do people keep smoking? Why? Why do we do all of that when we know better? We know this information.
Yeah. It's a complex issue. And it needs not to be addressed in the doctor's office, but it needs to be addressed in the workplace.
Mm.
It needs to be addressed in your spare time. Unless one sets aside time to exercise, time to address the issues. It never seems to get done. The pace of our life is such that, by the end of the day, we're exhausted and people don't address their health concerns. And, I don't want to get too passionate about it, but Jiminy's, these are such critical issues that don't get the attention from patients that they need. If you have high blood pressure, you should be checking your blood pressure. If you have, if you're overweight, you need to develop a plan to address that, and the inability of most patients to come to grips with these real issues is a tragedy.
Yeah, and you should start checking all of that when you're middle aged or earlier than that.
No, I think once you're in your adult, you should have your blood pressure checked regularly, your cholesterol checked regularly, and you should have a plan. For what's your adequate caloric intake? How much exercise should you do? These plans should be addressed and passionately followed. And the best thing for me would be out of business. I mean, I would love not to see any patients. But you look around. You asked me. I rambled here, but you look around. Why obesity? Well, go to McDonald's.
Right.
I mean, a Big Mac is 600 calories. The caloric intake of the average person, 70-kilogram person should be maybe 1,800 calories. So if you have three Big Macs, you've done it for the day. Everything else you eat will put on pounds. And you can look at a Big Mac, Kentucky Fried Chicken. I don't want to pick on any.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean,
pick on whoever you want.
They're all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, how many? It's utterly unbelievable that we let this go on and on and on. And whether it's – so, I think each patient needs to ask themselves, what can they do to ensure that they're not going to have heart problems 10, 15, 20, years down the line.
Yeah. And as far as cigarettes are concerned, it seems to me as though they shouldn't be sold.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, we're making progress in that there are more smoke-free areas. And I'd like to see the entire country go smoke-free. I mean, it's an economic, political issue right now. But there's no question tobacco is the number one risk factor for heart disease. And you people worry about lung disease, but it's really heart disease that gets you when you smoke. And, you know, a smoker, if they stop smoking at 1 year, their risk goes down a half, and at 2 years, they're back to normal risk. So it's a modifiable risk factor. And I don't want to imply that smoking's a moral weakness. It's not. It's a very complex activity that needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
And your doctor shouldn't just throw a pill at you. We need to talk about what the options are. There's a lot of things we can do to help smokers get through this addiction. But again, it needs to be addressed. There needs to be a plan.
Can you explain, because I think we all find it kind of confusing. We got all these levels, high cholesterol, good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, numbers, triglycerides, all of that. Can you make that simple for us to understand?
Yes. In terms of heart disease, there are two types of cholesterol, LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, HDL, the good cholesterol. You know, most of our therapies are directed at lowering the bad cholesterol, LDL, and that's where the huge benefit of drugs has been, statins, you know, lovastatin, simvastatin, that have been out there that have shown remarkable decreases in lowering your LDL and really huge dramatic increases in survival. So you can affect your lipid profile, lowering your LDL, increasing your HDL by lifestyle. But, you know, medication is often very helpful in terms of getting you over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching your fats will lower your LDL. Increasing activity will increase your HDL.
Mm-hmm. And activity is also key. I'm now in a cardiac rehab program where they're working me pretty darn hard. Yesterday I worked pretty darn hard. But it feels so good. It feels good to get my body strong again, to feel that, you know, I'm okay. I mean, I'm not perfectly okay, but I'm getting stronger again. And I was talking to the nurses there, and they said there are a lot of people who don't follow through with cardiac rehab, that it may be a crucial thing to do if you have had coronary heart disease.
And no matter what sort of heart disease you have, those who exercise do much better. And these are hard endpoints. They live longer. They live healthier. The amount of exercise you need to do, aerobic exercise, walking, jogging, swimming, 30 minutes five times a week will pack a huge bang for your buck. And if you exercise, it puts to rest weight as a risk factor. So those people who can exercise don't need to necessarily focus on their weight.
Yeah.
You know, one mistake I think we make is we tend to overwhelm patients with all of this. And I think the message is rather simple. I think it's exercise regularly and stop smoking. And someone like you, that's what I wouldn't start overwhelming you with a lot of other factors at this point. I'd focus on really where the bang for the buck is. And someone like you, Kathleen, you got to stop smoking. And if you exercise regularly, you'll do well. We'll work on the LDL, the HDL. We'll work on your blood pressure. But I think with you, I don't want you to lose focus too much.
Right.
Put down the cigarettes.
Oh, they're down, let me tell you.
Jump on the treadmill.
Right. I'm doing both of those things. Nonetheless, there is this fear, and I know this is outside your area, but I know you have patients who I'm sure bring this up, because you haven't had a heart attack, and I've had a heart attack, and the sense, this overwhelming sense of dread, of doom, of going into, remember that Bob Fosse movie, all that jazz years ago, that you feel like you're traveling in this world that you don't want to be a part of, and you're not sure you're going to survive or not, and you're hearing people talk about what your blood pressure is and what's going to be done and what your survival rate will be from this procedure. And I got to tell you, from somebody who had an image of herself that was vital and vigorous, and people couldn't believe I had a heart attack. I still can't believe when I say this on the air that I had a heart attack. I can't believe it. But there's this sense of, ooh, I hope this doesn't happen again. And I feel a little twitch. Is it because I was exercising?
Yeah.
Am I going to die? What do I need to tell my son? There's this whole psychological aspect that can really be overwhelming.
Yes, and I've heard that frequently from patients. I think the further you get away from the episode, the better that gets. Some patients become overwhelmed with this and do need some help in terms of antidepressants, anti-anxiety, to tide them through the immediate period. But as patients exercise, as their life returns to normal, the memory of this, you know, very traumatic event goes away, and they move on with their life. So you're still in a period, I think, where you're struggling. As months go by, it will get better. And eventually, as you gain more confidence in your regular exercise, you'll be better than when you started. And I, you know, in a case like you, I'm almost glad you had a heart attack, because you've put down your cigarettes, and now you're going to be much healthier. I mean, you didn't have much heart damage. Your coronary artery was opened at the hospital pretty quickly, so you'll have a good outcome. And really, your outcome now is dependent upon how you modify your lifestyle. Right. So I'm happy about you, and I know that doesn't take away the dread, but as time goes on, it will get better, Kathleen. Yeah.
And tell me about, because I've thought about taking Tai Chi or something. I mentioned the stress, and it was a horrible period in my life. I mean, the stress was, I wasn't able to sleep. I was very close to my dad. It was really hard. And I've heard people say that stress can contribute to it, and I don't know, one of those little plaquey things jumps over into the heart or whatever happens. But what is the role of stress?
Well, stress is a key player. You know, a heart attack is just not a single event. You have to have a couple things come together. So the plaque is in the vessel wall, and it's covered by a thin fibrous cap. And that cap keeps the cholesterol from going into the bloodstream that's in the plaque. And if you have stress, it can increase your blood pressure. It can cause that cap to weaken. And if that cap cracks, the cholesterol goes into the bloodstream, and that forms a clot. And it's that clot that blocks the blood vessel. You know, previously we thought that, you know, you'd have a 10% narrowing, and then a 20% narrowing, and a 40% narrowing, and an 80% narrowing, and then 100% narrowing, and then you had your heart attack. But that's not at all what happens. Mm. You have multiple 10% narrowings with these thin fibrous caps. And if one of them gets unstable, we know that smoking makes them inflammatory and makes them unstable. We know that stress increases your blood pressure and makes them unstable. So it's this combination. Stress also makes your blood vessel, your blood, a little stickier. So when the cholesterol does get into the bloodstream, it tends to form a clot more easily. So you need multiple things to come together to have that event. I mean, I don't want to ramble too much, but, you know, in the California earthquake, that earthquake in Oakland, California, in the earthquake was in 89, about 20 people die a day of heart attacks.
Really?
During that earthquake, the next 2 days, we had 50, 60, 70 people die.
Oh my.
And then the following 2 weeks, hardly anybody died. So all those people who were vulnerable had those vulnerable plaques. The stress of the earthquake moved them all up. So instead of dying regularly over the next 2 weeks, they all died the next couple of days because of the high blood pressure spikes, the high stress spikes, which caused those plaques to rupture early. And then after 2 weeks, the event rate returned to normal.
Interesting.
So that was a nice example, physiologic example, how stresses can cause heart attacks.
So are you a believer in yoga and meditation and Tai Chi and all of that?
Absolutely. I think if those modalities help you deal with your stress, absolutely. You know, they all have benefits, you know, physical activity, psychologic benefits. You know, it's the heart is just not sitting there in your chest. It's the whole body that we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the ability to deal with one's stress, to exercise, to relax is important.
Right.
It's not only your body's health, your heart's health.
Right. All right, let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. Just keep those numbers in your head because our lines are filled right now. You can also go to our website, which is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. We're talking about prevention. We're talking about treatment. We also have a website now that you can go to, so in case you just want to get more information, which I know is what I did. I just went to the web and got tons of information. We do have a website for you. It's WPR.org, and then you just go to Kathleen Dunn, and there are a whole list of valuable websites, how to reduce your heart attack risk, heart disease, learn the risk factors, diet and nutrition. The American Heart Association has a terrific website because they can also help you do your shopping. You know, you push on a little thing. This is what you should buy at the grocery store, which is heart healthy, which for those of us who don't like to shop is a great thing. Brian Dorrington from Fraidert has helped put that together, and Dr. Biblo has as well, and Rhonda Fanning. So go there and get healthier. Dr. Lee Biblo is our guest. He is a cardiologist and happens to be my cardiologist. This is a weird show for me to do because it's much more personal than I normally get, but I thought it might be helpful to you. He's in the cardiovascular medicine department at Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he is vice chair of the Department of Medicine there. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we've got a phone calls now for Dr. Lee Biblo, and we'll start with Colette from River Falls. Hi, Colette.
Hi. I just want some advice about how I can scare to death my husband. He's 50 years old. He's the physique of Homer Simpson. He's a walking butter pat for his cholesterol. And every time he's hyper now, I'm scared to death he's going to have a heart attack. I'm thinking of sending him to the doctor, and I was wondering what test besides cholesterol I can give him that will scare him to death and get him on track.
Well, I need to ask if it's good to scare somebody to death, too. Is that the way to take care of it?
My sense is that starting with an office visit is a good way to start his plan, looking at his blood pressure, looking at his cholesterol, and looking at his weight, you know, seeing where his weight should be. You know, as a tactic for a spouse to work with their loved one, I often say, you know, you should exercise together. You know, get him out walking together, work on this together. I often take long walks with my wife. I think it's very, you know, it's healthy activity. It's good for the soul. It's, you know, so I think getting him involved with activities with you is a good place to start after you've seen that initial visit.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, do you think my friend was recommending a stress test. Do you think that's necessary, or do you think I should skip that?
Again, depending on how his symptoms are, often I'll do a stress test, not so much I'm worried about heart disease, but to better advise patients sort of in their middle age, and I guess 50 now is middle age, on how to exercise. So if they do a stress test, I can see how they perform and then develop an exercise program for them. So the stress test, I think, is good in giving a patient a much more sound exercise prescription.
And when you talk about exercise, you know, I frequently, part of the reason that I was surprised I had a heart attack is that, well, I figured, you know, I was a swimmer. I swam all the time. But maybe I wasn't getting the heart rate up to where it should be, or wasn't following the correct procedure to get your heart real strong. Is that what was going on?
Again, Kathleen, if I had to tell you one thing, it would have not been your exercise. It was your smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with you, the key is smoking. In terms of advising patients on exercise, I don't really care too much how hard they work. It's really the duration.
Mm.
So a brisk walk for a half hour, five times a week, I'm fine with. A swim, you know, walking on a treadmill, a jog. I think it's the continuous exercise for 30 minutes at a time, five times a week. A lot of patients tell me, well, I walk at work, but that's intermittent walking. That doesn't really count. You need sustained walking, sustained aerobic exercise. In terms of targeting your heart rate, I generally ask patients to try to get their heart rate up over 100, try to work a nice sweat. And again, the exercise test helps me in forming that prescription as well.
Yeah. She talked about scaring her husband. What tactics work? We talked earlier about the amount of obesity, that people still smoke, that we go to McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all these places many times a week, many of us. Do scare tactics work? Is it that we appeal to people's reason? Or I'm wondering if we have the best public relations strategy here.
I don't think scare tactics are helpful. I think a continuous dialogue about this. You know, most patients don't stop smoking until they're ready to stop smoking. And so... You know, one has to work out the issues. Why is your husband overweight? Why is he ignoring these symptoms? It needs a dialogue. Mm-hmm. And spouses are often good at bringing those out. Are there other stresses in their life going on? Again, it's a complicated issue. There's no quick fix. I think it's a constant dialogue. And altering one's lifestyle. And that's why I like exercise. The spouses walking together because they can talk, they can sort things out. You know, we go through a very busy day, and we often don't talk to our spouses enough. And finding some time for yourself, I think, is good for your marriage, and it's good for your heart.
We go to Ann from Manitowoc. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking this
show. Sure.
While you were recovering, there was a news story which stated that women are less likely to survive a heart attack,
right,
and even much less likely to survive any surgery. And I know the symptoms for women are significantly different than they are for men, and I just appreciate the doctor addressing those for us women.
It is scarier in women, and there's been a lot of statistical data that women indeed are less likely to survive a heart attack, and women don't do as well with bypass surgery. The feeling is that when you look at the coronary arteries in women versus men, the coronary arteries are actually smaller, so there's less room, there's less give. So if you develop a problem, you have less tolerance to survive that. So absolutely, I think once women have heart disease, I'm much more worried about them. In terms of the atypical symptoms, absolutely, women can have atypical symptoms, as can men. So I think what, you know, if you're having a new symptom that you're not sure you've had before, jaw pain, chest pain, back pain, arm pain, you know, breast pain, indigestion that is really out of context, I think you have to take those symptoms seriously, especially any pain that tends to get worse with exertion and gets better with rest. That's pretty indicative that you're dealing with a cardiac etiology.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Ian, for your call. We go to Bob next from Eau Claire. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, and congratulations. It's nice to have you back, and excuse me. I have a horror story of my own that started with indigestion, and doctor, you just mentioned indigestion as one of the symptoms, and yet 4 years ago, I had indigestion that came up on Labor Day weekend completely out of the blue, and we were doing some light moving of stuff and packing for a weekend trip, and it was a hot, humid day. I had the indigestion. I had sweats. It happened both on Friday and again on Saturday. And my wife finally looked at me and said, "There's something going on here. You are going to the doctor right away on Tuesday." And I saw the family doc, told him about the indigestion, and he said, "You're throwing me a red herring, Bob." And he ordered a stress test, and halfway through the stress test, they said, "Stop." They were afraid I was going to die on the treadmill. And I ended up with what is affectionately known as cabbage times four, which is a four arterial bypass. And the one thing that I'm kind of curious about now, I've been given a regimen of Lipitor and also lisinopril and toprol. And Kathleen, I assume that you've been given something similar as well.
I'm on a few drugs, yeah.
Yeah. Are these drugs then a lifetime issue? Is that something that you can expect to be on for as long as you live?
Going through your drugs, and I don't know, sir, how much heart damage you had, and that would play a part into this. The Lipitor is a statin, and that's very helpful in lowering cholesterol. In patients who have had bypasses, we know that patients on statins, the bypasses stay open much longer. So, yes, that's probably a lifetime drug. The lisinopril and toprol are both bloods commonly used for high blood pressure, or if a patient's had damage to their heart muscle, it prevents the heart from dilating. So if you had significant damage or you have high blood pressure, those would be lifetime as well. I also hope you're on an aspirin. You probably should be on an aspirin as well in terms of that regimen.
I am.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. Go get him, Bob.
Luck.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call.
Bye.
Let's go to an email here, because I don't even know what this is, but it brings up a broader question. Fred from Violet County, how effective is a C-reactive protein test in detecting heart disease? C-reactive?
Well, C-reactive protein is a test that's a measure of inflammation. And earlier when we were talking about coronary artery disease, you know, that cholesterol plaque, it's just not a hunk of cholesterol sitting in your artery. There's an inflammatory response to it as well. And the more inflammation you have, the more likely that cholesterol is to crack open into the vessel. So it's an indirect measure of inflammation, and patients who have an elevated CRP are more prone to have heart attacks because of that. And, you know, in the lay press, there is this big thing about gum disease, and gum disease was worse. And, well, gum disease, again, is another thing that causes inflammation in the entire body and causes more inflammation in those cholesterol plaques. So CRP is an indirect measure of inflammation. And statistically, if your CRP is elevated, you're more likely to have a heart attack.
Okay. In my case, I mean, I was trying to think desperately of indications that I had that something was coming. And I got to tell you, it was pretty much out of the blue for me. I had maybe a little tightness in the chest after I did a lot of exercise, never thinking it was a heart problem necessarily. Should I pay attention to that? Or why didn't I get something to tell me what was coming?
Well, you know, the heart's a remarkably effective organ. You know, if you have those 10% Neurags in your blood vessels, the supply of the heart's fine. It's fine. And only on that day when that cholesterol plaque cracks open, cholesterol goes into the bloodstream and you form a clot and you go from a 10% Nerag to a total obstruction, do you have symptoms. So frequently patients don't have symptoms until they have the heart attack. So that's why it's so important to prevent those plaques from getting in there at the beginning.
Right, right.
So again, you know, and when you're in your 20s, that's when you need to start watching your diet. Exercise regularly. Don't smoke. You know, pay attention to your blood pressure. If you're doing all that in your 20s and 30s, you know, when you're our age, Kathleen, you're not going to have problems. And again, so that's why it's scary, because you can actually have a stress test today. And the stress test just looks at cholesterol plaques that are significant. And then tomorrow you have a stressful episode, you have something going on in your life, and you crack open one of those plaques, you can have a heart attack. So a stress test today that's normal does not mean you're free from a heart attack tomorrow.
Right.
Because it just takes one of those plaques to crack open and block the blood vessel.
Can't you do some kind of, I don't know, picture some kind of x-ray thing of the heart to see how those arteries are doing? Is there such a thing or not?
Well, we do, you know, we do coronary angiograms, and that's where we inject dye into those arteries, and we can get an estimation of how much plaque burden you have in your heart. There are CT scans now that can look at the plaque burden. But again, if you have plaque in your heart, the emphasis is not going to be based on anything I can do. It's based on what you can do. Stop smoking, exercise regularly, watch your blood pressure, eat responsibly. Those are the things that have an impact that stabilize those plaques that are already in your heart. If you're doing all the wrong stuff, if you're not taking your blood pressures, if you're smoking, those plaques are going to crack open. And whether you have a bypass or not, you're going to have trouble down the line because you've got all these other plaques in your heart arteries that are vulnerable.
Yeah.
So a bypass is not a cure. The cure is modifying your lifestyle.
We have a lot of resources for you as well. For those of you who may not be able to get through today or you just want more information, if you go to WPR.org and then go to Kathleen Dunn, there are a whole list of resources that the people of Frederick have kindly put together for us, and Dr. Biblow has as well. Prevention, diet, all of that. All right. Dory is next from Sun Prairie. Hi, Dory.
Hi there. I told your screener, I worked on the ambulance for many, many years. We would take women into the hospital, into the ER, and they would have chest pains or other symptoms. Basically, they would be looked at and told, oh, you've got heartburn, sent home. And I can tell you that many people died because they didn't take women's symptoms seriously. When are they going to start training ER docs?
Well, it is a problem. And unquestionably, in the medical field, there is a bias where men receive more heart angiograms, men receive more bypasses than women. And I think this is where, you know, you don't want to get it to the point where you're going to an emergency room. You want to make sure you have an effective relationship with your primary care doc and you're discussing these issues way before you get to that point and dealing with the blood pressure, dealing with your lipid profile, dealing with an exercise prescription. You know, once you get to the ED, you know, then you're you know, I think you're too far down the line. And I, you know, I wish I could do something about the biases in medicine. So my advice to women would be really make sure you have a relationship with a doctor that you can trust. And if you don't have a good relationship and that doc is blowing you off, change. Mm-hmm. It's important.
Do you think those biases are changing?
Yes.
I do, too.
I do.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Dory, for the call. An email that's come in, Dr. Biblow, the entire family needs to weigh in on dietary needs of the heart patient. Spouses and children need to work to change their dietary obsessions for the good of the family. There should be no secondhand smoke in the home of the heart patient. Helping give the heart patient the time and encouragement to exercise. And finally, the family must be supportive of finding stress relief, time to do yoga, meditation, tai chi, et cetera. I'm sure you would agree.
I agreed entirely.
All right. All right. Somebody should type that up and just put it on the refrigerator. Thanks, Dory, very much for your call. We go next to Ron from Nina. Hi, Ron.
Hi. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks.
Good.
I've got a question that I'd like to maybe get Dr. Biblow's opinion on. And it seems like we always talk about LDL and we're talking about cholesterol. But there seems to be advanced lipid testing available that looks beyond cholesterol and looking at particles that typically is considered by most lipidologists to be driving the disease. So I'm just kind of curious, do you do advanced lipid testing in your office and what's your opinion on it?
There's no question that there are other subfractions of cholesterol that are important in terms of risk. I continue to focus on the LDL in my office because that's the one that's most modifiable. The statins lower the LDL. We don't have a lot of, at this point in time, good therapies for the other subfractions that you mentioned. So, you know, again, I'm trying to spend most of my time where there's bang for the buck. If someone's LDL is 150, I know that if I advise them on a diet and start them on a statin. By the way, I wouldn't use Lipitor. I'd use a generic like Simvastatin. It's much cheaper, just as effective. And I can knock down their LDL by 50%. And
really?
Yes, and have a meaningful impact on their survival. So I think the story about the subfractions, the low-density particles, et cetera, is unfolding. And as we get more intelligent, hopefully we'll have better therapies to move those in the right directions.
I need to ask you, because certainly in conversations that I've had with fellow heart patients, the subject of vitamins has come up, and vitamin D3, I think there was a show earlier this week on that it's all the rage now in it being anti-inflammatory. People are talking about calcium. People are talking about omega-3 fishy, whatever the heck it is. You'll know what it is. Are those helpful? Do you recommend vitamins, multivitamin a day?
Kathleen, in a roundabout answer, I'm always frustrated when I see a patient come to the office who's smoking, who's overweight, who doesn't exercise, and they're on 13 or 14 different vitamins and herbal preparations. They're asking me if they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what this industry has done, and this industry is a huge industry with vitamins, et cetera, is it's taken away the focus where it should be. There is no quick cure for this. I mean, vitamin D or fish oils all probably have a role. But in the, you know, if you want to really knock down your risk, knock down the chunks that's causing your heart disease, I don't think it's rocket science. It's smoking, it's exercise, it's diet, it's watching your blood pressure and lowering your LDL. And I think that's where you get your bang for the buck. And I'm always frustrated. You know, people ask me, is garlic okay? Well, you know, as long as you're not breathing it on me, I guess it's okay. But, you know, I don't think that's where the bang for the buck is.
Okay. Thanks, Ron, very much for the call. We go next to Rosie from Vilas County. Hi, Rosie.
Hi, good morning. Two quick questions for the doctor. In regards to a previous caller who asked about or emailed about the C-reactive protein, I wondered if I have an appointment with my cardiologist in a couple weeks and I have a long history of problems, is it unreasonable, in your opinion, to, I'm feeling like I want to insist on this HSCRP assay, if you think that's a reasonable test to perform? And also I wanted to ask what the doctor thought of the recent Vytorin study that came out. My doctor is not changing people off of that med, and I wondered what he thought
about
that.
Have you had a heart attack? What's your past here?
A long family history. parents who both died of strokes prior to age 60, on and on and on I could go. And it's hereditary, and I'm trying to do everything. I've always tried to do everything on my part to, you know, have my best health, but my cholesterol and so forth, it's a hereditary thing. It's it's not dietary. It's always been a struggle to keep those things under control, and I feel pretty sure that that's what my future holds, so I do try to stay on top of it with the doctor, but before I see him, I try to get as much information and get the bang out of the buck for seeing him, and I just wondered what the doctor thought about this more sensitive HS CRP test, and also what he thought about Vytorin.
Okay, Rosie.
And I like the fact that you prepare before your visit. I mean, I think that's wonderful. You should have take a list of questions for your doctor, talk about them, spend time, get them answered. The HS-CRP is a high-sensitive CRP. And again, if you're looking for prognosis, it's a reasonable test. In terms of if it were elevated, I would still do the same things that we've been talking about. I wouldn't do anything specific for the HS-CRP, so it might give you some insight into your risk, but I would still focus on smoking cessation, weight control, blood pressure control, lipid control, et cetera. The Vytorin is an interesting story. You know, Vytorin is a combination of Zetia, which is a drug that, you know, affects how cholesterol is absorbed, and simvastatin, which is a statin that has a very robust record of being very effective. In the trial, Vytorin, which is the combination of Zetia and simvastatin, was compared to simvastatin. And in fact, there was no benefit. And in fact, the patients on the combination seemed to do a little bit worse than the patients on simvastatin alone. That being said, I think it's made everyone a little bit anxious. We don't know why. And when you looked at the cholesterol levels, the combination drug Vytorin lowered the LDL a little bit more effective than the simvastatin alone. So we're still not sure what to make of it. I think at this point, most docs are holding off and not stopping it, but continuing the Zetia simvastatin combination, which is Vytorin, until more data is out there. But it's certainly something reasonable to talk to your doc about. And if you just wanted to go on the simvastatin part and stop the Zetia part, I think of the Vytorin, that's reasonable.
Dr. Lee Biblow is our guest. We're talking about preventing heart disease and treating heart disease. He is a cardiologist, and you all know what I've been through. I had a heart attack 5 weeks and 4 days ago, and he is my cardiologist. And I said, you got to be on the air with me. He thought for a second, said, I don't think so. I said, no, really. It's important. So he did it, and I'm happy he did. He's in the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine at Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he's vice chair of the Department of Medicine. Our phone number, one line is open right now. Better take it. They've been filled, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Our email on air is talk@WPR.org, and we also, because we want you to prevent heart disease, please prevent what happened to me. You don't want it to happen to anybody you love or to yourself. We have a list of resources put together with the help of people at Fraidert and Rhonda Fanning, our producer. And to get to that list, you just go to WPR.org and then maneuver your way to Kathleen Dunn. And we got that list of resources. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Lee Biblow is our guest cardiologist, and we're talking about your heart this hour. We start with our this round of phone calls with Kathy from Eau Claire. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I'm calling to raise up awareness of women not always having classical symptoms.
Uh-huh.
I had a heart attack when I was 46, and the pain was between my shoulder blades, excruciating, and I couldn't breathe. It was like I was kept trying to catch my breath.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, my friend tried all kinds of things to help me. Luckily, she was with me and took me to the hospital. And once I got to the hospital, they looked at me and said, you're too young to be having a heart attack.
Oh, my.
A gallbladder.
Oh, my.
And so they were going to treat me that way when one of the doctors said, maybe just in case. And so then they did the test the next morning, the angiogram. And there was no blockage whatsoever, but I had had a heart attack. There was damage to the back of my heart. And so I think it's important to lift that up.
So what did they do for you?
I went through the cardiac rehab, like you're currently doing, and I'm on medication. And I have, you know, checkups every 6 months.
And do you mind if I ask how old you are now?
I am going to be 55 in a few
months. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So. You're taking care of yourself. Dr. Biblo, we talked a little bit about this, but do we get misdiagnoses like this? It's your gallbladder. It's not your heart?
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of gray hair, and it's all because the pain receptors for the esophagus, the gallbladder, the heart are all very similar. So by taking a history, often it's hard to dissect that out. So you almost have to err on the conservative side and assume it's the heart, prove it's not the heart before moving on to diagnosis. So this is a common problem that creates havoc in every emergency room and in every cardiologist's office. And at this point, you know, when a patient has a new symptom that they've not had before, I assume it's the heart and prove it's not the heart and then move on from there. But I appreciate the viewpoint of the atypical pain, and it makes all of us anxious when we see patients present with atypical pain syndromes, because you just have to assume the worst.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy, for your call.
All right.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Bob from West Dallas next. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Doctor and Kathleen. I have AFib or arrhythmia, and I was wondering about...
That's one of his specialties. You called the right guy.
Yeah, right. That's what I thought. So anyway, I'm wondering about whether Toprol, 100 milligrams per day, twice a day is what they recommend, whether that or whether some type of procedure for an over 80 person is a way to go. What is your thoughts in regard to AFib?
Well, AFib is a syndrome where the top chambers, instead of contracting, are just sort of squiggling around, and the bottom chambers are doing all the work. Really, in terms of therapy, it sort of depends on how you're feeling. Toprol is very effective at controlling the heart rate. So if your heart rate's under good control, it's usually between 60 and 100, and you're feeling pretty well, you can do your daily activities, you can exercise, I think Toprol alone is a very reasonable therapy. For those patients who are symptomatic despite all that, then there are other various things, including pacemakers and ablations, that we can do to cure AF. But I still think the mainstay of therapy is medications like Toprol to control the heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
You should also be on a blood thinner. Are you on warfarin?
I'm on aspirin.
Okay, aspirin's okay. You might want to talk about warfarin with your doctor. Warfarin's a little bit more powerful blood thinner, and depending on your other risk factors, may be appropriate.
Well, they felt that aspirin was sufficient in my case. So.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Bob, for your call. Jennifer from Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, Kathy. I wondered what happened to you, and I'm glad to hear that you're okay.
Thank you.
I just wanted to share with the listeners that I, too, had an emergency triple bypass on the 4th of February.
Oh, my.
Except I went through it with no health insurance.
Oh, gee, Jennifer. Oh.
I'm sorry.
And it's ultimately going to cost me everything. My house, everything I own. So, folks, whatever you're doing out there, support single-payer health insurance. We need it bad.
Yeah, well, obviously, everybody should have health insurance. That's my thought.
You bet. You shouldn't. And I'm glad you're doing well.
And how are you? I mean, I know you're in financial straits, but...
I actually just came from the surgeon's office, and I'm doing fine. I haven't smoked a cigarette since that day, and I never will again.
Wonderful.
And that's another thing, folks. Quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, you smell really terrible.
Good luck to you, Jennifer. Yeah. Well, that's another whole show,
people
need to have health insurance as well, because I'm sure that's going to cost her some money. But we hope there are resources in the state that you can go to, Jennifer. Thanks for your call. We've got time for maybe one more phone call. It'll have to be brief. Mary from Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi. I have left bundle branch blockage, and I did end up with a cardiac arrest, and I do have a pacemaker. I was given the chemical equivalent to the stress test. I have a very high pain threshold. I did not feel anything on that test. And my concern is I still can have a heart attack even if I have the pacemaker. And everyone keeps telling me, oh, don't worry. Well, I do. My dad died at 56 of a heart attack. My mother had silent heart attacks.
All right, I need to hold you there. I'm sorry, Mary, but we're almost out of time. Dr. Bibelow.
The chemical stress test picks up heart disease about 80 to 85% of the time. So, again, depending on your symptoms and your family history, in someone like you, I might proceed to a coronary angiogram. So that'd be something to discuss with your doc to see. The angiogram will be the gold standard in telling you if you have any blockages in those coronary arteries.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Dr. Bibelow, thank you so much for being with us. It was an important show to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kathleen, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, I'm doing my best, doctor, because of you. You wouldn't let me not do my best here. Dr. Lee Bibelow, cardiologist. He happens to be my cardiologist as I recuperate from my heart attack. He's in the cardiovascular medicine department at Fraidert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. He's also vice chair of the Department of Medicine. We want to let you know we have a website, if you'd like to go to it, for prevention of heart disease, which is so important, and also for changes to make to your diet, et cetera, if you have cardiovascular disease, and that is WPR.org. Go to Kathleen Dunn, and we will also be having a series of heart disease-related programs. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the program. Thanks to Brian Dorrington from Fraidert for helping put together the website, and thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.